I'm Guy Ramsey for Aryan Matters. Today we have with us a very special guest, and we'll be covering a topic I think everyone will be very interested in, the recent deportation and incarceration of prominent Holocaust revisionists. We're going to be talking with a Dr. Ari Dingelblum, who holds a position of certain importance in a prominent American Jewish interest group. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Dr. Dingelblum, let's talk about...
Don't you laugh.
I'm
Don't
sorry.
Don't you freaking laugh at me. I swear to God. Get a load of these guys.
Sorry about that. Doctor, I must have something stuck in my throat for a second.
Oh, right.
Anyway, concerning the recent spate of arrests of revisionists, most recently David Irving.
Oh, you mean the Holocaust deniers.
Okay, well, let's, just so we're on the same page here, why don't you give us your definition of Holocaust and your definition of Holocaust denier?
Well, the Holocaust, of course, refers to the systematic genocide of 6 million Jews by the German Nazis, and a Holocaust denier would be anyone that says or even thinks that this horrible affront to mankind, in fact, did not happen.
Okay, those seem to be definitions that most uninformed people might give, I suppose.
Oh, that's right. Why do you think we've made so many movies and written so many books and whatnot about it? Jesus.
To reinforce that 6 million Jews died, that Nazis are bad, that Germans are bad, and probably just plain all white people are bad, too.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I know. But why should it be illegal to even suggest that, you know, maybe some of the evidence deserves a second look?
Evidence? Jesus Christ, 6 million Jews were killed to death.
But why is Holocaust revisionism illegal in most of Europe and in Canada and Australia and New Zealand and it seems like everywhere else these days?
Because of what they did to us.
Who, revisionists?
The Nazis, smartass.
Yeah, but revisionists aren't Nazis.
They're the same thing.
Oh, David Irving is a Nazi?
Well, you know, he did write a book about Hitler.
So did William Shirer and John Toland and
right,
40,000 other people.
I don't know what you're talking about, sir. Were you trying to make a point?
Yes, I am. Let's go back a minute. You said in your earlier definition that 6 million Jews were killed, irrefutable.
Irrefutable.
Why, then, has the official count at Auschwitz gone from 4 million to, quote, about 1.5 million to name... just one of many, many examples of how it is not irrefutable.
Well, I don't know.
Well, was that not a revision of a major part of the Holocaust line? I mean, you just reduced the supposed murder count by almost half.
Well, I guess we're still trying to figure out who to prosecute for that one.
All right, look, David Irving.
Pseudo-intellectual.
No, a brilliant man, one of the most knowledgeable historians on Hitler and the Third Reich.
Amateur historian.
Shut your mouth. Look, Irving has spent more days buried in original German war documents than I've even been alive. He's spoken with many, many officials from National Socialist Germany. He found no revelations on the Jews being marked for extinction. I mean, if anyone would know it would be him. I mean, why should he be thrown in prison for this?
These are all lies.
Why should anyone that has a different opinion than the Jews, opinions based on facts, I might add, this particular event in history, why should they be subject to the forfeiture of his freedom?
Because it was a crime against humanity. Jesus.
But there's all kinds of crimes against humanity. Have you ever heard of the Red Terror? That was a lot worse than your supposed 6 million. I don't seem to recall any Washington, D.C. Office of Special Investigation of the Red Terror researching murdered Ukrainians.
No one would care.
Seems to me you people don't like your position as the kings of misery to be challenged.
I see. Everything is the Jews' fault once again. Hey, what's next? I assume you also think we're responsible for the sick and screwed up American culture we live in, huh? Huh. Silence.
You brought it up.
Oh, come on, man. Tell me you don't like seeing a big badass nigga strutting down the street with some hot blonde chick.
Oh, my God. This interview is over.
What?
There you have it. No straight answers. Just a bunch of crap.
What?
I'm Guy Ramsey. Back to you guys.
What? Oh, come on.
Welcome to Area Matters, news and views from a white racialist viewpoint. My name is James Hawthorne, and with me again is Lee Gardner. Good evening, Lee.
Hey, how you doing, James?
Doing very well. I'm going to start my first story this evening, which you've all been eagerly waiting for, I understand. David Irving, great historian from my country, Great Britain. just when we thought it was all over with Ernst Zundel being arrested and being put in prison, now we have David Irving. Shock. I could not believe it when I turned on my computer and saw David Irving was in Austria to talk to some students about history and the great issues of the day. And lo and behold, he gets arrested on a warrant from 1979. That blew me away. I always thought it was a limitations on warrants for arrest, but apparently not for revisionists, and especially revisionists who query the Holocaust.
Yeah.
Mr. Irving was pulled over by the good old Austrian Secret Service / police, arrested, and now is dwelling in an Austrian gulag. This just blows me away again. It's told down about what is freedom in a democratic country. Apparently, in a democratic country, you can be a Jesus denier. You can say the earth is flat.
Yeah.
You can do almost certain horrible things. Some guy in Germany killed someone and ate them and got 8 years. And they're saying that Irving should get 20.
Yeah.
For denying
the
good old Holocaust.
Right.
You know, it blows
it's
me.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
It brings me back to my old comment about the Alice in Wonderland that we live in. What is up and down and what is around is square.
Yeah.
It's looking through this Jewish looking glass. It's
It's
all not real.
People should really ask themselves about what does this say? Like you just mentioned, you can say the earth is flat and everybody leaves you alone. You can say the earth is hollow. You can say did Jesus ever exist or Jesus never existed. But this is the only thing, the Holocaust, where there are laws about it saying you have to believe it. And if you go against it, you go to jail.
They'll lock you up.
It says, what does that say?
Yeah, it says in this article, which is from Reuters, denying the Holocaust is a crime in Austria, which carries a sentence from 1 to 10 years. There's a good chance if the Austrian government push forward with this ridiculous attempt to lock up this historian, there's a good chance he could get 5 years, because that seems to be the average for denying the Holocaust, in quotes. 5 years seems to be the maximum that these people get. But David Irving is a good man.
And you know, we've got to talk about that terminology too, the Holocaust denier. What does that mean? I didn't really know what that meant until I actually talked to some of these guys, these revisionists.
Uh-huh.
The first thing you think of when you hear that Holocaust denial is it's absurd on its face, like you mentioned once. That's like if we said we denied something that never happened.
Uh-huh.
If you call me, you know, I'm a denier of the sun exploding. That doesn't make any sense because the sun hasn't exploded, so how can I deny it? If it didn't happen, what the hell does not denying it mean? It doesn't mean anything because it didn't happen. But where they get that from is from the Jew Sigmund Freud and his whole idea about denial. That's where they get that from. They say there's something mentally wrong with you. You're in denial. So your Holocaust denial is that stupid bullshit Jew Freud and his idea. That's the reason they brought it up. So it could be interpreted either way. Both ways are obviously, you know, I mean, the end result is always, well, look, I should be able to question any damn thing I want if we're allegedly in this great democratic Western society where I have all these rights to think freely.
I remember in 1977 when Hitler's War first came out and David Irving was being interviewed from all the media. The first question that the Jewish media asked him was, did he believe through all his research through the archives that there was a final solution of the Jewish problem, i.e. the killing of the automated killing of 6 million European Jews? Irving quite honestly turned round to the reporter and said, through all my research in the archives, I have never and not found the Führer Order. That's all he said. I have not found the Führer Order that would turn the Third Reich onto the European Jews in an automated mass extermination program. That's all he said. He did not find the Führer Order. The next day, I remember, it was front page headlines. Irving said Hitler did not know about the Holocaust.
Yeah.
You know, Irving never said that. What Irving said was he never found the Führer order for the so-called extermination of the so-called 6 million Jews.
Yeah.
But apparently everything I've read for this story, the Jews targeted him when he first did his story on the destruction of Dresden book.
Yeah.
That's when they took a keen interest in him. And I think from that point they decided to destroy him.
Yeah.
And here we are today, this great historian, good man, is now in the gulag in Austria.
The gulag is the right term. This is a Soviet-style, communist-style system. That's what it is. Anybody who believes in National Socialism, right, or the Holocaust didn't happen, which of course it didn't, they're going to get in trouble and be put in the gulag.
But there's something interesting to this story also, which is not reported. The Austrian Freedom Party, which was under the leadership of Jörg Haider, which no longer, they've just signed on to this European Concordat of European nationalist groups, Alessandro Mussolini and the National Front of France and a few other larger nationalist parties have come together to form this flexible concordat of nationalist parties, hoping to bring a unity within the European Union Parliament and also within the European Union. But the Austrian Freedom Party are in government, yet they're allowing this man to be put in prison. And if this man is allowed to stay in prison, that would reflect badly on the Austrian Freedom Party. And if there are any Austrian Freedom Party, FPO people, listen to our show, I would hope you would put pressure on your members of parliament and government to get Mr. Irving out, because he doesn't belong there, and it's an absolute travesty.
Right.
Lee, your story is about...
recent remarks by the FBI chief, Robert S. Mueller, to the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, in New York. This is dated November 3rd, and it's from the FBI's website.
Well, the ADL?
The ADL is a Jewish organization, right, that was created in 1913 after a Jew in Georgia was lynched by the public because he had killed a girl that worked in his factory, a 13-year-old girl. I believe her name was Mary Fagan. And what happened was he was pardoned, I think, by the governor of Georgia. And the people decided, some people, of course, not all people, but some people decided, you know, this isn't justice. And they formed a little lynch mob and hung the guy up. After that, the Jews got together and said, you know what, we've got to form this Anti-Defamation League, and it will protect Jews from this, which is, they call anti-Semitism, right? So, again, the fact that the guy was Jewish, how could that have anything to do with it? All they knew is, here's this guy, he killed this girl, he got let off, probably because of a bribe to the governor, and then because they wanted the justice to be served, they killed him. And where in there does anybody think that the fact that the guy was a Jew had anything to do with it?
So the Anti-Defamation League is anti-defamation against Jews. Is that what it is?
Exactly. It's supposed to be anti-defamation against Jews, but what it is, it's a defamation league against everybody who's not a Jew and doesn't go along with what the Jews want. It doesn't matter what the Jews want. It could be the Zionism. It could be pornography. It could be anything they want. If you attack a fellow Jew, they're going to defame you.
You, yeah.
It's a defamation league. That's the right term for it.
Par for the course.
Right. But our idiots in our government, sad to say, this is, you know, our United States government back over there across the pond, they believe that the ADL are good guys. Now, you've got all kind of evidence to show that they are not. Okay, one thing that they did, okay, in the FBI and regular police departments everywhere across the United States could not illegally get information about American citizens. So what they would do is they would rely on the ADL to give it to them, because the ADL could do it, and they would go through and dig through people's garbage for letters and correspondence. They would they'd wiretap people and everything else, and they would give the information to the police department or to the FBI under the table. See, because then the FBI said, well, we didn't do that. We didn't go out and wiretap. We didn't go out and snoop through someone's garbage. We just got the information. And they don't say where they got the information from. They do that a lot. And, of course, this whole thing blew up once in the 90s, 93, I think, when Roy Bullock of the San Francisco Police Department, another Jew, were busted for what they call spying on, illegally spying on American citizens. All that happened to the ADL was, first, it was immediately a news story. Of course, not nationwide right away. Then it was immediately played down, and so it was definitely kept from being nationwide media cover, which is damn important, because there's a major ADL headquarters in almost every large city in the United States. You know, they're all over the place. And so they were fined like $90,000 or something, and that was the end of it. That's all that happened. Of course, that organization, which has gets something like $16 million a year, that was their annual budget, is at least $16 million. That was back then, I think. And they have, you know, hundreds of people working for them. Of course, almost all Jews.
I think it's $40 million now.
It's probably $40 million now.
Abraham Foxman, is he the director?
Yeah, he's the director.
Well, apparently he gets $500,000 a year.
Oh, my God.
So it should be the ADL on behalf of Abraham Foxman.
Yeah.
To keep him employed.
Yeah. When they did the investigation, they found the office plans to this guy who was an Arab American that was blown up. His name was Alex O'Day. He was blown up in his office. They found the plans to his office in this material that the ADL had. Now, Victor Ostrovsky, the former Mossad agent, spills all kind of beans about the ADL. Even though it started off as this, you know, anti-defamation league against the poor innocent Jews, blah 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 bullshit, because of the anti-Semitism, right, which allegedly caused the hanging of this guy, this killer. That was the start of it, but later on, the Mossad decided, well, they can use that organization, right? So if somebody is causing problems against Israel, like especially like in the United States government, so there's a congressman causing problems saying, well, I don't like this Israeli funding, or we shouldn't give them that much money, or we shouldn't give them those weapons or whatever, they would call the ADL and say, hey, label that guy. Label him an anti-Semite. They use that as a tool, again, to get what they want, to destroy somebody. He admitted this, you know, because he went against the Mossad himself because he said what they are doing, which is typical Jewish behavior as far as we're concerned, and all the different things that they were doing, he didn't like that because he said if the Mossad keeps doing that, they're going to turn everybody against them and Israel and Jews. So they're hurting Jews by their behavior. Well, guess what? They can't stop their behavior. You know, maybe a few Jews stand back and say, wait a minute, this is not right. But those Jews are so few and far between, it won't make a difference. They can't have an impact on the overall problem of the Jews behaving in this horrible fashion, which is anti-Aryan, anti-Western, anti-everything we believe in.
It's hilarious to watch the Jews in Israel sometimes get totally embarrassed with like Foxman and Wiesenthal and all that. Certain Jews in Israel get really upset with those people because they go over the line, and other Jews in Israel would probably say, no, you can't be that expressive on these certain points because then the goy will know, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's probably what's going on there. Yeah.
Exactly. That happens occasionally. It doesn't happen very much. That they complain that that's against their own people. They don't do that very much.
No, I think the kikes in Israel, they've got a country there and they don't want to lose it. They don't want an uprising of the whole world coming down on Israel and Tel Aviv. So they got the country there, which they're quite happy with, but they don't want these Jews in the diaspora, especially in the United States of America. Foxman on $500,000 a year. Wiesenthal was making whatever he was making. Marvin Hayer now, that dwarf-looking Jew. These people are coining it in, and they're out there, and they're a bit more extreme and a bit more fervent in their Jewish beliefs against us, the poor goyim. You know, so that's the reason. All I'm saying is that's the reason why the Jews in Israel are upset with Foxman and now Hayer, is because these guys sort of open the door to people like us and normal, regular white working people to see what these Jews are doing.
Yeah.
And they don't like it
in
Israel.
Yeah. Think about this, folks. The chief law enforcement officer in the United States, who works for the United States Attorney General, goes to the ADL and says these things. Okay, here's one quote. The Anti-Defamation League and the FBI share a strong bond of friendship. Now, again, after what I just told you about the fact that they were involved in criminal activity and helped to kill Alex O'Day and spy on American citizens, that right there should give you a sense of fear, of dread, saying something wrong here. That's not good. Okay, then later on in this speech that he gave, he says, as we confront international threats, we cannot forget terrorists who operate in our own country using violence to intimidate and coerce Americans. They are also a deadly threat, as we came to understand in Oklahoma City on April 19, 1995. Now, as a lot of people know, they say Timothy McVeigh was inspired by Dr. Pierce's Turner Diaries, all right? They said, well, I believe they said, I don't even know if they found it in any of his stuff. Yeah, he probably had a Bible there too, right? But you don't hear people going around saying, well, you know, the Bible inspired them to do that. Well, you do hear a lot of Jews and idiotic Christians now who believe that, you know, the Muslims are inspired by the Quran. You know, that's why they commit these attacks against the United States and all these terrorist things. They're inspired by the Quran. And I say that's total bullshit. If you really know or have talked to a lot of these people, what inevitably happens is, and has happened in their life, is most of them, were not really particularly religious. And then they suffered through a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff, like their family members were killed by Americans or by Israelis or whatever over there, or and by American equipment, right, over there. And then they thought, okay, now I'm going to fight back. I'm going to have to kill myself to commit this terrorist act, but I'm going to fight back because they killed my family. Well, at that point, they became religious. That's when they said, you know what, I'm about to die here. I better make my peace with God. That's what they do. I'm not a religious person at all. But I don't know, if there was a big war, I might go back to my Catholic roots and all of a sudden say, you know what, I better go to the priest here and confess and all that. I better do that just in case. And just because you did that, all of a sudden, is that some kind of religious thing? Now I'm doing it because I'm a Catholic? You know, it has nothing to do with it. Anyway, further in this article, Mueller said this. He said, along with domestic terrorists, hate crimes remain a concern. Our annual report on hate crime statistics included over 7,600 criminal incidents committed in 2004, resulting from antagonism over race, religion, sexual orientation, or disability.
Now, were those hate crimes probably not on black on white crimes, the absolute slaughter of our white women by these simians? In the even though the FBI do report and those things on their website, and the simian slaughter of our white women, Guy Fieri has a good thing, and also we recommend you to get the Aryan Alternative newspaper, Hush Crimes. That's what they are. These niggers, These niggers are killing our white our white women, killing them, butchering them, raping them.
Yeah.
Hush Crimes. You don't see it in the media. The FBI director right here, right now, everybody, is talking about white racialists attacking black people or Asian people or Jewish people. He's at the ADL conference on quote, hate. That's what he's talking about, the director's talking about. Yet we have a tsunami of black on white crime in all our nations. And these people, these coppers, that's all they are, these coppers,
appealers,
are worrying about the insignificant white crime on ethnic crime.
Right.
I'm afraid, ladies and gentlemen, the director of the FBI is just a Shabes Goy.
That's right. The hush crimes term is perfect for what happens. And Dr. Pierce mentioned this many times. He said, every time you see this big black white on black crime that happens, like that nigger bird that got killed in Texas, It's all over the news, national news, all this horrible, you know, anti-black, you know, racism, blah, 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 this hate, you know, this caused this. At the same time, a white guy got killed by a bunch of niggers. They didn't talk about it, right? So it's like, well, okay, why are you stressing or emphasizing that, but not the same exact crime that occurred by black and occurs a lot more frequently among these fucking simians, you know, than it does among white people? We know white people are not that violent.
There is, as I said before, there is a tsunami of black and white crime out there, and it's not reported. It's not reported in the media, media meaning in the newspapers. It's not reported on the television. It is a goddamn tsunami of niggers on our people. That's what it is. And yes. Here we have the good old director of the FBI with the ADL, with Abraham Foxman, on $500,000 a year, sitting there and saying, let's talk about white on ethnic crime.
Right.
It's absolute, pardon my rant here, folks, it's absolute bullshit.
It's total bullshit. And it is, it's again, it's sickening to let them accuse us. And the fact that he actually might even believe this crap.
He does.
That white people are really the problem, and that we might be the next domestic terrorist that commits some Oklahoma City bombing. Which if you go back to it, every time one of these things happen, just like September 11th, every time one of these things happen, they never ask why.
Why did McVeigh bomb that building?
Why did McVeigh bomb the building?
Well, everything
he said why.
Everything I... Well, this is just an objective view from an Englishman. Everything I read and saw about the whole thing was that he was so upset that the Branch Davidians...
Absolutely.
Men, women, and children were burned to death.
The Waco Massacre.
Were burned to death by the FBI and ATF. He was so incensed and unhappy about that.
Right.
He decided to give the FBI ATF payback.
Right. That's all it was. That's all it was. It doesn't matter how many movies he had or books he read or Turner Diaries or anything. That has nothing to do with it.
The Jewish media now turns around and says that because he had the Turner Diaries and it was a big white nationalist plot to start war on the government, and this was the start of it, and had the FBI not cracked down. And
they want to make that connection. Again, if we are anti-Jewish, everybody knows the Al-Qaeda and the Muslim terrorists are anti-Jewish. So the anti-Jewish people are the terrorists. You know, that's what they want to do. They want to paint us with that brush.
But the ADL, having the director of the FBI and all his people trot through these Holocaust museums to cry crocodile tears over something that never happened. Now the ADL will tell the FBI that, yeah, it's, you know, the real terrorists in the United States and in Europe, it's not really the Muslim, it's these neo-Nazis and white nationalists, they're the real terrorists, and they're the ones that you should round up and lock up.
Right.
That's what's going on here, folks.
That's what they want to get to.
Yeah, it's absolute bullshit.
Just like the Holocaust denier thing.
The Holocaust deniers.
They're going to use this whole thing about us being neo-Nazi brainwashed people that could commit terrorist acts.
And
that'll be what'll get us locked up.
And I've noticed everything that's happened since 9/11 and everything that's happened since 7/7 in London. People who've been accused of crimes have been white nationalists or national socialists. Very, very few Muslims have been rounded up.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Very, very few. The Jews know that we're their real enemy, white nationalists or national socialists. We are the real enemy of the Jew because we know what a parasite he is in our communities. We know he is the evil incarnate. He is Count Dracula in your living room. He really is.
That's right, the bloodsucker.
He is the bloodsucker of our nations.
Jews.
They are evil.
Yep, Dr. Pierce said they were the bloodsuckers, and that's what we think. And they prove themselves that. Let me finish this. And he says, it is the same groups preaching hate and intolerance in our country that plant the seeds that grow into terrorism. All right, so just what we were saying. And then the last thing it says is that they receive... He's talking about what the FBI is going to receive. They receive extensive instruction on constitutional law, criminal procedure, and sensitivity to other cultures. In partnership with the ADL and with many thanks to my predecessor, Louis Free,
Jew.
Who was a Jew, all new FBI special agents make a visit to the Holocaust Museum to see for themselves what happens when law enforcement becomes a tool of oppression. See, they use the Holocaust lie to indoctrinate people, right?
Not only indoctrinate, intimidate people.
Yeah, and intimidate them.
And lock people up like David Irving, Ernst Zundel, Gimmer Rudolph, the whole bag of wax.
It just makes me want to throw up.
Makes you want to throw up. Makes you want to chuck up.
Yeah.
It just blows me away that these people are allowed to do this stuff and get away with it. But they can because they have the power. They have the power.
In your country,
3% of the population, and where we are right now in England, the Jews are about 1.5% of the population.
Yeah.
But look in all our white lands and look where all these Jews are situated, and they use the Holocaust for themselves, obviously. It's a scam. As that great book, The Holocaust Industry, by Norman Finkelstein shows, it's a scam. But this small population of people holds so much power over us.
Absolutely.
Over the goyim.
The poor cattle. That's what they consider us, and that's how we act.
Yeah. You know, we act like cattle, we do.
Yeah, if we don't stand up like real men, you know, which the National Socialists, the Germans were, then they'll treat us like cattle, herd us around.
That's what that's what we're saying, is National Socialists. Let's stand up as white men, as Aryans, as Viking warriors from the past. Let's stand up and fight these evil Jews, and let's push them back into their little country in Israel.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, my next story is speaking of the Jews and National Socialism. Now we're in Australia, one of our good white lands too. A gentleman by the name of Lajos Polgar. This guy is 90 years of age. Now, his crime was that he was a member of the Arrow Cross Party in Hungary in the 1930s, 40s. Now, the Arrow Cross Party was a nationalist party, pro-national socialist, and after the war, he emigrated to Australia. Now, the Simon Wiesenthal Centre had decided to target this man, who's 90 years of age, and who's suffering, who has heart trouble, and stomach trouble, and prostate trouble, and he's not in good health. The Simon Wiesenthal Centre has come after this man, Mr. Polgar, 90 years of age, living in Melbourne, doing no harm to anybody. He's been there for 50 years, by the way. The Simon Wiesenthal Centre, this evil organisation, but the reason why they're going after him, get ready for this, everybody. The reason why the great Simon Wiesenthal Center has gone after Mr. Polgar, 90 years of age, who's nearly on his deathbed because of his illnesses, is because he is accused of murdering a Jewish teenager in 1944.
Oh, my God.
Can you believe that, everybody?
Those people.
The greatest weight of the Simon Wiesenthal Center has mobilized to come after a gentleman in Australia
who's
90 years of age,
years
in
old.
Ill health,
yeah.
Because they say, quote, he murdered a Jewish teenager in 1944. Can you believe that?
That's sickening. That demonstrates that these Jews are evil individuals. First off, why would you remember? Keep carrying this hate.
He's not accused of so-called chucking into the ovens 10,000 Jews or these so-called quote gas chambers 3 million Jews. No, one single Jewish teenager in 1934.
Yeah, I know. How could you? This race who dwells, they dwell on their alleged persecution. By the goyim, right? They dwell on that. They remember it. They'll never forget they have these holidays like, you know, Yom Kippur and Purim.
And Purim, you can look in the Talmud at the Purim, yeah?
Yeah, to
evil holiday.
Yeah, to commemorate their victories. And again, they are so vindictive. Here he is, 90 years old or whatever. Well, the guy is not going to do anything at all. You know, he's going to pass away very soon. And the point that they make this big spectacle of it, that they have to go and prosecute the guy. Why are they doing this again? They're doing it to send a message, just like with Zundel and with David Irving with this Holocaust denier thing. You don't cross the Jews and get away with it. It's probably not even murder. How do they know? It could have been self-defense, for all they know. And it could have been justified. In the history of the Third Reich and what happened in Eastern Europe with the Einsatzgruppen, it's so crazy and bizarre when you talk to people who don't know anything about history, and especially, you know, German history, which is most Americans over there in America. If you say that when the Einsatzgruppen were going around shooting people, they say, well, they were sent to kill Jews. And it was not the case at all, right? The Einsatzgruppen went out to stop the partisans, the communist partisans who were committing terrorist acts. Hans von der Heide, who was an SS guy, who was out in Russia during the Second World War, and said that the partisans were causing all kind of problems. Like, for example, what they would do is they would cut communication lines. What you would have to do, the German soldiers would, is you would have to go all the way down the line to find out where it was cut to fix it. They'd wait for that person to come there, and then they'd snipe them and shoot them. Another example is when some Jews were shot. Like, I think it was during the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, they were shot because what they had done is they had one of them had shot one of the guards in the back of the head. You know, when he had his back turned, they just shot him and killed him. So then they take this guy out and execute him, and all of a sudden, he's anti-Semitic, or he's persecuting the Jews, or he's murdering them, right? That has nothing to do with it. So what happened with the Einsatzkommando is they were tasked to go out and stop the partisans from committing their terrorist acts, and they were doing all kind of terrorist acts, is they would just shoot them. And they reported back, hey, we just shot 100 of these guys who were partisans. And what would happen is a lot of them were Jews. Then they found out more and more of them were Jews, and it's like, well, damn, all these radical communist partisans, almost all of them were Jews. So after a while, they just started referring to them as the Jews. We're taking these Jews, we're shooting these Jews. But the fact is that they actually honestly knew, without a shadow of a doubt, that they had committed these crimes. And it's just like Commander Rockwell said in regards to the Rosenbergs. In the United States, we executed Julius and Ethel Rosenberg because they were communist spies. We didn't execute them because they were Jews. That's the same comparison to what the Einsatzgruppen were doing over there.
I want to read this quote from this article from the Australian Network News. This is unbelievable too. Quote, copies of court records from the 1940s included in the Wiesenthal Center's request allegedly show that Mr. Polgar made numerous decisions affecting Hungarian Jews and may have participated in killings and persecutions. Yet the Wiesenthal Center is coming after him, as I said before, for the so-called murder of a teenager in 1944. It just blows me away. It absolutely blows me away. Our elderly people are being persecuted. Germans, Hungarians, Romanians, French, British. You can go through the whole cacophony of the nations that came together with the Third Reich to fight communism.
Right.
And these people, to this day, this man is near on his deathbed, 90 years of age, being persecuted by the vindictive, evil Simon Wiesenthal Center.
Yeah, yeah. These kikes have no scruples.
No scruples, the vindictive, and we're the targets, everybody. So if we don't stand up and fight back, then we're going to get crushed.
Yeah.
What's your next story there, Lee?
There's a Charles Lindbergh speech that was posted on National Vanguard, which I thought was pretty telling, okay? Charles Lindbergh gave this speech in Des Moines, Iowa in 1941. And One of the things he says here is that when this war started in Europe, it was clear that American people were solidly opposed to entering it. Then he says, national polls showed that when England and France declared war on Germany in 1939, less than 10% of our population favored a similar course for America. So that's one thing that we didn't even talk about much. England and France declared war on Germany in 1939.
Thinking about world domination right there, if the Germans had wanted to do world domination, they could have cleaned up Africa. If you thought about it, there, you know. So, but we all know the National Socialist Third Reich government did not want world domination.
No, it didn't. And when you tell some dumb American this, when you say, well, it was England and France that declared war on Germany. So if you got a problem with the Second World War, why would you blame it on the Germans? Then they go away, and they usually come back, and they go, well, they invaded Poland. That's why, you know, we had to declare war because they invaded Poland. Okay. They invaded Poland. Why? Because Germans were being murdered in the city of Danzig, right, which used to be a part of the German territory, the German Reich, before the Treaty of Versailles. So Germans were being murdered, and they tried and tried and tried to solve the problem diplomatically, and it didn't work. And what would you do? If you were in charge of the country like America, and you knew that your fellow Americans were being murdered down in Mexico, wouldn't you invade it? I mean, you know, you would want to look out for your people. You would do that.
The M1 tanks would be, well, hopefully, I mean, under a healthy government, let's paraphrase that, under a healthy government,
yeah,
the M1 tanks would be marching through the Mexican border, let me tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. And apparently we didn't have any problems with the fact that the Russians invaded Poland, too.
No, that was okay.
It was right immediately after that. I mean, I don't even know if it was a week. It was probably a matter of days when the Russians invaded Poland from the south. England or France didn't say, hey, what are you doing? Stop. You can't do that.
That was okay.
And then now we find out for sure, even though people say this was a lie told by the Germans, then now we find out for sure that Stalin had amassed the army and planned the invasion. Just like Hitler said, he said, look, these guys are about to come in. So even if we're solving this problem with Poland, with our German citizens here helping them out, we're telling you the Jewish Bolsheviks are about to attack Europe. And then there's no doubt about it that Stalin said, well, this is great that England and France have come into it, because guess what? We'll let these guys fight it out and weaken themselves. Oh. So we can roll over them all easily. So they knew that Germany was going to coming after them, after Bolshevism and communism, and they said, well, this is great. These idiots have done this. Let them fight it out more so we can actually roll in.
Conformist historians will never, never, never broach the subject of the imminent invasion of the Third Reich by the Soviet Union forces. They won't go there. And the reason why they won't go there is because the Third Reich and National Socialism had a survival instinct to invade Russia first, because they knew Uncle Joe was amassing a huge body of army to invade the Third Reich. So Hitler turned around and said, well, we know they're going to hit us, we might as well hit them first.
Well, it wasn't just the Third Reich, it was Europe,
yeah,
that they were after. That's why all of these guys, if you look at almost all of these leaders of these Eastern European countries, like King Boris of Bulgaria, all these guys were all of a sudden supporters of Hitler.
Yeah.
Why were they supporters of Hitler and Mussolini? Well, because they knew that they were the defenders of Europe. And the reason they knew this mainly is because of what they call the Spanish Civil War, right? Which was not a civil war. What it was, in reality, was a attempted communist takeover. It was the Reds tried to take it over. And who helped them out? Who helped the Spanish out? It wasn't the damn Americans. The only thing America did was we sent more communists over there.
Mm-hmm.
We sent the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. The Abraham Lincoln Brigade, which was a communist front, came from the States and tried to help the communists that took over. Now, who sent the men and the weapons and the ammunition and all that stuff down to the brave anti-communist forces?
The nationalist forces.
Hitler did.
Nationalist forces. Hitler did. Yeah.
Hitler did. Mussolini did. They're the ones that, that sent aid and brave men down there to help them fight against the communists. And this was 36, 37, right? I believe that's when the so-called Spanish Civil War was.
Even the Irish sent the Colonel Duffy, his name was, the blue shirt of Ireland, went to fight for the nationalist forces and the Spanish Civil War.
Yeah.
Little historical anecdote here.
Anyway, and a little later on in the speech by Charles Lindbergh, he says, the three most important groups who have been pressing this country toward war are the British, the Jewish, and the Roosevelt administration. A little later on in the speech, he says, the second major group I mentioned is the Jewish. And further down, he says, their greatest danger to this country lies in their large ownership and influence in our motion pictures, our press, our radio, and our government. And this is 1941.
41.
That he's saying this.
So if that's like that now, as we say today, obviously they have a total lock on the whole thing now.
Yeah.
If Charles, the great Charles Lindbergh, is saying that in that period, as we all know now, they have a total control.
It's a yes.
Over our means of communication.
It is.
And I think I mentioned on the last program that if you're an invading force that takes over a country, what's the first thing you do? You take over the means of communication.
Right.
The Jews have usurped our nations, and they've took over our means of communication. That's what happens with an invading force, whether it's a military force or, like the Jews, a subterranean force. Take over our means of communication. They've done that. It's happened. It's what's happening right now. So we have to come together, white brothers and sisters.
Right.
And we have to unify, and we have to cast them out.
Yeah. I believe one thing that the Rockwell said, I mean, he might have not been the first one to say this, but I remember him saying this. He said, in communist China, you can criticize anybody you want except the communists. In Cuba, you can criticize anybody you want except the communists. And in America, you can criticize anybody you want except the Jews. And the reason he used the previous examples is not just because communism is Jewish, but because it shows who is in power. In any country, you can never criticize who is in power, right? Because if you do, you run the risk of losing your life.
Here in Great Britain, you can't criticize the Jews because the Jews are in power.
Right.
1% of the population are in power in my country right now. When I say empowered, they're the string pullers behind the scenes, you know, as I mentioned in our last program, Mr. Levy. If you checked out our link on Mentionables, you'll know all about Mr. Levy. You can just go onto the web and just put his name in and just look around, and he's such a piece of work. In France the same, or Germany, or you can just pick your country. And the good thing about the internet is you can go on there and look around, and you know, you'll look into your specific country where you are and just do a little bit of digging. You won't have to dig too deep to see who's revolving round our so-called brave politicians. And my friends, it's the Jew.
Yeah, they're always behind the scene pushing their agenda, and it's always anti-Aryan, anti-white.
They're trying to destroy us. We're coming to a new age, and the new age is white people standing up and saying, no, we're not going to take this crap anymore. We're going to stand up as white men, as Rockwell said, as good, strong white men, and we're going to fight back. Hopefully, good Aryan people, good white people, will take the message on board, and we will save our race, and we'll save our nations from this utter catastrophe that's just round the corner, my friends. It's just round the corner. One of the things that the Jews are pushing is this globalization thing. Me and Lee did a little experiment the other day. We went shopping, and the reason why we went shopping was we wanted to see if we could go and find some knives and forks were not made in China. So we looked around and thought, where would we find some stuff that was not made in China? Obviously, as does everywhere, You go in there, even the clothes made in China, and you pick up a, if you smoke an ashtray, you turn it upside down, it's made in China. You pick up a, you can pick up anything right now, no matter where you are, it's made in China. So me and Lee did a good thing. We looked, where would you think that you would not find made in China? And we thought, let's look at our Nordic ancestry. Oh, well, IKEA is a good Swedish company. It sells everything. It's very popular all over the world. So we thought, well, we got a local IKEA where we are. So we popped along, and Lee did the driving for once, and we popped along. And we went in, and it's a beautiful IKEA store. The pine smell hits you as you first walk in. You feel like you're marching down through the fjords of Sweden. We go to where the cutlery is, and we're looking around there, and Lee goes there, picks up the cutlery, he looks at, he picks it up, he turns it round, hoping to see made in Sweden.
Right.
But no, my friends, what did Lee find? He turned it round and it said, made in the People's Republic of China. Can you believe that?
Not just made in China, but the People's Republic of China. I mean, they want to be arrogant about it.
It just needed the little flag on it.
That's right.
But here we are in IKEA, a so-called Swedish company. And this globalization is it's out of control. It's putting our people out of work. White people are getting put out of work. And having seen this in the Knives and Forks section, maybe moved around a bit. See what else we can find. There was nothing in this store that we could not find that was not made in China.
We just got disgusted after several looks around, and after a while, it's like, you know what? Let's just forget it. This is bad.
But this globalization, what it's doing is it's putting our people out of work. Well, I mean like that, white people in the United States, in England, France. You can name any Aryan country that you can think that we're from. Or races from, we're getting put out of work. An engineer is an example. Once this person has done his education as an engineer, he should have a job for life. Even if his company diversified, you would think that he would have a job for life. Well, my friends, that's not what globalization is all about.
Nope.
Globalization is screw the worker, and especially screw the white worker, and let's give all our manufacturing to China and friggin' India.
Right.
You know, it's appalling. It blows me away. I get really, really angry.
Yeah, well, you should.
I get really, really angry.
Everybody should.
Middle America. Well, one day, even though right now they have their nice houses and their two-car garages, but it's coming... Middle America, it's coming, just like it's come to United Kingdom, France, and all other white countries. It's coming. The capitalist system can't sustain paying the Chinese the equivalent of a white man's wage, and especially an engineer's wage. It's coming, and these capitalist, pardon my English here, these capitalist pigs don't care.
No,
what makes the best profit is best for them, and they will screw us, and they are screwing us.
Yeah, I mean, because what happens is we are brought down to their level, the third world level, because the only way, like say you're an engineer, the only way you can compete is by saying, well, I'll work for that lower wage too.
Uh-huh.
Or guess what? I'll work for even lower than that. So now you've just agreed to have a lower standard of living. Now you can't afford all the stuff that you could have afforded before, and now the company makes more profit. They will make the profit off of your loss, of your giving up your standard of living to compete with the Chinese Indian standard of living.
And the company will put you in a position, or us in a position, where they will say, well, if you're not prepared to lower your wages to the situation where our company makes a profit, guess what? You will lose your job. You'll get put on the scrap heap, and we'll send your job either to China or frickin' India.
That's right.
And these These people don't care. They don't care about us or white people. They do not care.
No,
they care about profits.
Yeah.
The capitalists.
They care about profits.
Profits. That's
right.
All
That's
they care.
All they care
they
about.
Don't care about people, families,
right.
Nations. They care about company profits.
All they care about is money.
Money, big bucks, big pounds, big euros. That's all they
right.
care about.
For themselves. And again, since we've got this whole idea of individualism, they think, well, everybody's out for themselves. So I'm trying to make money. Everybody else is trying to make money. And if I can make more money in this way, I'll do it. And that's fine because they would do the same thing. So now we're all fighting each other. That's the whole basis of it, or the result of it, of this kind of ideology, is you're going, everybody's going to be in conflict and tension with everybody else. Or, again, we all become a third world country. And that's the ultimate Jewish, communist, world, international, globalist, utopia.
America.
That is it.
America and Europe has been destined to become third world.
Yeah. Their ideal is that the entire world is one big slave labor camp, and they are the only ones who get the profits. That's their ideal world. They own us, and we're the slaves, you know, all of us. It doesn't matter what color you are. You're part of the global plantation that's working for them.
Globalization means Bombay is basically a shithole. I call it the toilet hole of India. It's an abject shithole. But outside, I can't remember what city it was, but they've built this city, and it just looks like any town, America, or any town, London, with all these office blocks. Now, this has been brought about by globalization. They have, in corporate America and in England, UK, and in our European countries, the backside of corporate America, i.e. the customer service jobs, the low-end jobs, have been farmed off to this city in India. And it's a full-blown city. It works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Men, women go to work. They have taxis who shuttle these people back to the office and back home. George Orwell couldn't have wrote it better. They go in there, but, you know, these are jobs that white people have done and can still do.
Yeah.
But because of the capitalist pigs, have decided that they can get a better rate by shifting that part of the office into India.
Right.
And it blows me away.
And the reason for that is because we jump on the free trade bandwagon, which means you can't impose tariffs and other charges on them so that they cannot outdo your own workers. What we should be doing is making it so that it's more expensive for an American company or a UK company to actually go basically out of the country.
It's absolute crap that we're going to allow this so-called free trade thing where we're supposed our engineers and our white people who are educated, who put men on the frickin' moon, are trying to compete with people who are shitting the rice paddy and people who are shitting in the Ganges in India, who are, especially in India,
yeah,
are on like, they are on the same pay a month that what our people are on the same pay a week.
Right.
You can't
right.
compete with,
no,
you
can't
cannot
compete,
compete
with,
that.
And most white people who are not as, I don't know, well traveled as we are, I guess, they don't know, they don't understand the comparison, the problem, the difference that it is third world. One thing, for example, I saw not too long ago was that when an eclipse came, those people over there, there's a bunch of people over there, I think it was Sri Lanka, they were scared. They were scared of the eclipse.
They were?
Yeah. How many people in Europe or America are scared when an eclipse happens? They aren't. We just don't get that. I mean, most Americans don't understand that's the difference there, and they live in these shacks, you know, they have dirt roads. It's third world. How else can I say it?
You tell me the next time someone from Bombay, India, is going to put a man on the moon. Probably they will do it, but he will be in some dirty sink who shot to the moon or something, you know, something retarded. I mean, it ain't going to happen. It's not going to happen. China may get there in 2017 or something. It's because they're growing, but they're growing and we're dying. That's how I see the economic situation. Jewish capitalism doesn't work, people. It does not work. What works is National Socialism, yeah, in a true sense of the word. If we have to, let's barter. That's the best way to go. Barter's a good way of doing business.
Yeah.
There's no interest involved. There's no Jews involved. Our little brief examination for area matters. To look around for non-made-in-China stuff, then, and we couldn't find it, you know that there's something drastically wrong. In the Nordic store, as IKEA, as I said before, you walked in, you could not find anything made in Sweden.
No. Nope.
Nothing, absolutely nothing in that store.
I don't even know if the Swedish meatballs cafeteria were made in Sweden.
It's unbelievable.
It's sad.
And on that point, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to thank you for joining us today. We'll see you again on the next Area Matters. Don't forget, you can drop us a line at our great email address, askaneonazi@yahoo.com. We will answer any questions, whatever you want, about National Socialism and the way forward. Drop us a line. We will be here next time. From me, James Hawthorne, and from Lee Gardner.
We'll see you next time.
Bye, people.
Bye.